Welcome back to the From Girls to Women podcast, where the voices of young Black females are elevated and celebrated. Hi, everyone. I'm your host, Dr. Marquita Cherie Dorsey. And today's episode was so dynamic, we had to break it up into two, part one and part two. Part one today, I had the privilege of sitting, chatting with a group of young adult Black females who are eager to share their perspective and their experiences on some very important topics. Of course, the overturn of Roe v. Wade, the sexual assault rates among Black females, particularly as they encounter things from undergraduate coursework to graduate school even. These young women have a lot to say, and I was just enthralled by their perspectives, and not that I was surprised that they were able to share insightful feedback around these topics that are most relevant today, but I was just really proud that this generation of young Black adult educated women are really eager to make such changes in many of the issues that we see today. I mean, we talk so much about action and even their own experiences with negativity in their environment and how they've kind of overcome and excel beyond it. Our conversation goes pretty fluidly from topic to topic, so I really hope that you appreciate this. But if you have a young adult in your life, this is certainly the episode you want to listen to and really kind of glean from what they're saying. You know, really lean in, because they're sharing some jewels that are just valuable for everyone to take from. So I hope that you appreciate this part one. Stay tuned to the end to hear our follow-up thoughts and transitioning into part two. Thanks for joining us. Welcome, everybody. Thank you for everyone who's joined us today. Today we have a dynamic group of voices here joining the From Girls to Women podcast. We have Miss Mia, Miss Anicia, Miss Ashanti, Miss DK, and Miss Diamond here to share their perspectives about some issues that we have all predetermined. So let's get into it. I've invited these young women to share their perspectives as candidly as they please, and I'm really looking forward to this conversation. So welcome everybody.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey.
Hello.
All right. So let's just start, you know, from this list, which we have here, which I'm excited because, you know, listeners, you all are in for a treat. When we think about one of the most important things that folks are talking about today, obviously, is the overturning of Roe versus Wade. Let's start there. Right. What does it mean? We have some of you that have just recently graduated from college. Congratulations, me and Ashanti. And then others that are on their way very soon. But this particular overturning of what has given really some protections to us around whether or not we choose to have an abortion or not is really essential for right now, right? But it's overturned. What does that mean with this overturning? What does that mean for you? Why is it important? And what does it mean for your own life?
Well, I just believe that as far as abortion, I feel like a woman should have the choice over their own body. And the fact that a group of men and one woman decided that they wanted to take that from all women is kind of concerning. Mm-hmm. And it's just not right.
Yep. On so many levels, right, Mia?
On many levels, yes.
Yeah. And to piggyback off of Mia, in my opinion, it's definitely unruly, because not only, like, okay, the obvious is men controlling women's bodies, but it's so many effects that come behind it, because, like, some women genuinely can't have a kid, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like a woman, she's already putting her life in danger to have the abortion. So, and that's just during the procedure. But it's like to put your life in danger to, you know, get rid of the baby, like, your to put your freedom in danger, mm-hmm. as mm-hmm. well as like double the trouble. Like,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you were mentioning around, you know, you are a criminal justice major. And you were talk about some of the things you were sharing as it relates to, you know, different laws and.
Yes. So in my criminal law class, my teacher have us doing case briefings where we look up Supreme Court cases and we jot down the facts and everything, you know, basically learn the Supreme Court cases and they fall up under the amendment. Mm-hmm. So, of course, this abortion and stuff like that. Like freedom of doing whatever. So it's like the First Amendment. But also what follows up under it is the Fourth Amendment, which is search and seizure. Mm. And they're also trying to make it so whereas they can search, like they can use your toolbar. You know, if you look up abortion clinic, because you do that, like they can charge, they can use that as evidence against you for going to get your abortion. They can use your search engine in which mm-hmm. you look up on the phone that you pay the bill for, they can mm-hmm. literally go through that and use that against you, as well as giving you, charging you with intent to murder.
Mm-hmm. Like, and you're talking about certain state laws, yes?
Certain mm-hmm. state laws, but they're trying to make it an overall thing. So, mm-hmm. of course, like if I can't get an abortion in Alabama, I'm going to go to New York or I'm going to go to Michigan somewhere. And when I go to Michigan, I can be detained in Michigan and they can use my search history to,
mm-hmm. to criminalize you.
Here's the thing. Yeah, to criminalize mm-hmm. me. And it's like mm-hmm. double the whammy. Like uh-huh. I have to sit in jail. I have to be charged. I have to have a kid in jail that I didn't want to have. Like mm-hmm. it's just a fail situation. Mm-hmm. And then not only that, just imagine like how many places are not going to hire you. You're going to lose your job, you know, mm-hmm. and like that doesn't really make you a criminal. So for them to criminalize you or something like that, and that you basically lose your life, because a lot of people who face prison time, like, you know, mm-hmm. they can't get a job. They mm-hmm. can't vote. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? You can't even vote.
Yep.
So even if we were to have the opportunity to vote it out, like I'm out of the, I can't vote.
Yeah. Because of this criminal background, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so thinking about this, like almost intersection of what implications might come from overturning Roe v. Wade, specifically for Black females. I mean, criminal justice major. I know me and you were a criminal justice major, Anicia. Just thinking about the criminal justice system in general, you know, as it relates to Black females coming even back out and re-entering. How does that sit with y'all? You know, experiences with the criminal justice folks you know that may or may not have been involved or almost involved. And just think about how that might impact their life. Any thoughts on that?
I just feel like my way of thinking as far as going into the criminal justice system was more of in order to understand or under to get closer, you have to become one mm. of them.
If you can't beat them, join them.
Exactly. So this criminal justice system is like so broad and so old way that it's just they stuck in their ways, basically.
And when you say they, who are you referring to, Mia?
The government, the politicians, anybody, as far as even like the prison system or anything like that. Prison system was made up hundreds of years ago, and it's made to enslave people, mm-hmm. Black people specifically. Mm-hmm. So if my thing was, if you still have the same criminal justice system or prison system from when slavery ended, then why is it still the same system in 2022 mm-hmm. when we're still arresting and still getting people of color arrested for yep. minor crimes or like petty crimes mm-hmm. just to keep you in jail for years?
Yeah. Now this is this
to make money.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And so you're talking about making money, and let's even take it further, just a step further as it relates to, you know, many folks that are incarcerated today, for example, around marijuana charges, right? And we know that marijuana is now almost in most states, for most of the part, right, that most states have legalized marijuana. So how do we feel about folks that are incarcerated now still for marijuana charges that most states now have legalized, something that they've spent much of their life paying for?
It's irate. And it's irate because it's a business. And it's so many, I'm going to say since we're the minority, so many majorities that's making a large profit off of it, okay? Mm-hmm. So not only are they profiting off, you know, their own marijuana business, mm-hmm. but they're also profiting off the criminals that they have incarcerated for the same thing that happened. Mm-hmm. Like, it's irate. And, like, all the laws, basically, as I have been, since I've been a criminal justice major and I've been in my major since I've been in college, everything has been so jaw-dropping because every law is the same law, just in different words. Mm. Everything is the same, mm-hmm. but just worded differently. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like...
Yeah. What were you saying? I'm sorry, Nisia. What did you say, Mia?
I was just saying, like, it's sugar-coated. Like, most of the laws nowadays are, like, sugar-coated in a way where it's kind of like, oh, yeah... This mm-hmm. is illegal now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So deal with it. And that's it.
And so, then another thing is people don't understand how important it is to know your laws because just simply knowing your laws, a lot of people could be not incarcerated right now. But they are like they the system play mind games with people and they know who's educated and who is not educated mm-hmm. because they also profile you just off your appearance. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, mm-hmm. this person's driving this type of car, they look like this, they address says in this neighborhood because mm-hmm. you know gentrification, so it ain't hard to know. Mm-hmm. Oh, they stay on this side of town, they paying $200 for rent and on welfare, so yeah, let me go ahead and trick them out of they laws mm-hmm. and go ahead and put them in jail. Versus, you know, because a lot of people don't even know, like, to avoid being arrested, you could just ask me, what am I being arrested? Are you detaining? Mm-hmm. Am I under arrest?
Yeah.
Like, just that simply means, saying something like that can get you let go. Yeah. Like, am I under arrest? Did anything I do, is it illegal? If that's the case, but please just take me now. That's okay, nice. Let me know what it is. I'm about to call my lawyer before I lock the store.
Yeah.
And you take me out. But I need to know. See, a lot of people don't know that. They open the door, mm-hmm. get the window open, get mm-hmm. irate. That's another thing people do.
Yeah.
Losing. Just simply, you have to simply ask them, what are you stopping me for?
Yeah.
What did I do? Was it illegal? And searching, like, a lot of people get searched and don't even know, like, they can avoid it. A lot of people pay traffic tickets, don't even know they can go to court, and if the police officer don't show up, it's thrown away.
Yeah.
A lot of people pay traffic, get them little tickets in the mail from traffic light, mm-hmm. thinking they got to pay that. But who's going to defend the traffic light in court?
Yes. Listen. Now, Inesia, you're schooling us today, and I appreciate both you and Mia's education around criminal justice and helping us all know some things that we should really be mindful of. And so this is really important, though, right, for young females especially. So we know disproportionately Black and brown folks are racially profiled oftentimes when it comes to their interactions with police officers and just with the criminal justice in general. And so just to throw out a few numbers, when it comes to suspension rates, when it comes to school expulsion rates, Black females in particular are folks who are disproportionately involved and introduced basically to the criminal justice system. So what do we think about that? Like, we can, you know, how do we feel about experiences that whether it is at high school level, even younger, where young girls are more likely to be pointed out as a troublemaker than others?
Well, I will start off by saying I currently actually intern with some family court attorney, and they actually do education and especially in juvenile cases. And something that I've learned since I've been in this law firm is that a lot of kids get suspended for behavioral issues, but you're supposed to, like, instead of, you can't keep suspending someone. After a while, you're supposed to get the child tested, you know, to see if they have any learning disabilities, ADHD, ADD, because sometimes that type of stuff is underlying, you know, because everybody don't always look like they have a disorder. But instead of school systems testing students, and getting them the proper help as they should, because most teachers just going to work because they are on salary. Okay, so they ain't losing no money. Uh-oh. And the last thing they want to lose is some sleep. So the last thing they're going to do is tolerate a dysfunctional kid, in their words, you know, instead of doing a proper thing and sending them like, okay, I think this kid might need to get tested to see if they have, you know, a attention disorder or, you know what I'm saying? Or just to see, it may be something going on at home, because as young adults and even kids in general, you do what you see. You know, like it stems from your environment.
Yep. That's good. That's good. Others, Ashanti, DK, what are your thoughts? Because you got, you know, we've been flowing here when, you know, we started with Roe v. Wade. Now we're already talking about disabilities at the school level and how folks' underlying disabilities interfere with, you know, potentially the support that folks might really need instead of being directly, you know, channeled into any kind of criminal justice system that the school has relied on. So what thoughts do you have? I mean, specifically, I know one of the things that Ms. Denicia said around knowing your rights and knowing the laws that, you know, the rights that you have regarding the laws in your state and wherever you live, you know, it's really important to know these things. And then, of course, we're all dealing with the repercussions of Roe v. Wade being overturned.
Me personally, I feel like everything that Mia and Nisia, I think everything that they said is super valid. I also want to touch on just like the mental state that it could put women in, because I'm a psychology major. I'm a psychology major.
Nice.
And I'm in grad school now in the counseling program. And so I'm going to be dealing with, you know, mental health. That's really important too. But I really don't think that people understand that this could cause like so many things, like as far as like suicide, you know, just women harming themselves in general because they just don't want to have a baby. And I feel like since that option has been taken away, you know, like even now everything is higher. A lot of people are trying to apply for flu stamps, Section 8 is full, their waiting lists is like so much. So why are we like taking away that option, you know? Yep. Because even if a woman does have a baby, she's not in the perfect state to take care of it, they're going to take them away anyway. You know, they're going to be in foster care. And there's so many kids that are in foster care going from home to home.
Already.
You know, sometimes with people who just want money every month. Like, I saw this video that's saying, like, instead of helping this mom, you're giving money to somebody else when you could have just helped that mom, put the benefits in her hands, take care of her own child. But you take her child away. I mean, still put the baby in like a messed up situation. I just don't think it's fair, you know, especially like being a woman. Like, I feel like my options are really limited. And I've had this discussion on Facebook, and one of my cousins had come in and he was like, you just need to practice safe sex more. And me personally, I don't think me wanting pleasure sexually should be a baby should be a consequence of that.
Yes. Wait now. Ashanti, you got to repeat that. Say that one more time. Say that again.
I don't think me wanting pleasure sexually, like, I don't think consequence, like, should be a baby. Like, me having a baby, like, me having to have a baby, I don't think that's fair.
Yep.
You know, and I feel like if you're going to put this law on women, we need to talk to men, too. Like, they can get a vasectomy can be reversed.
That's
I feel like there's so many. If we're gonna vote, we need to vote on that too. Like, should a vasectomy be mandatory for a man? Because it can be reversed.
Come that's on. Yes.
That's my
yes. I see hand claps. I see preaching. Yes. What happened? Where do we fall short, right? Where we're regulating women's sexuality, but we're not regulating men's sexuality, or regulating women's sexual organs and not regulating men's sexual organs.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
They play a part here too. They play a part here as well.
A very big part.
And then it's not even mandatory that they take care of their kids. A lot of men don't feed her when a baby born. A lot of men don't sign birth certificates. And not even to get too personal. But, like, my dad didn't sign my birth certificate, so that's how I'm good. I'm just saying I don't have a dad when it comes to financial aid. You know what I'm saying? It's ridiculous.
Yep. I mean, I think that these are such good points that sometimes we just don't hear, right? And why do we think that is? So we hear a lot about what women should do, what care women should have. And sure, we want to make sure that birth control is accessible. But why do you think that we don't hear as much about what the other part should do, right? Me and you were like, yeah, it takes two, right? It's, you know, two are here. Why do y'all think, what do y'all have to say? Why do we think that there's so much emphasis on females versus men? Not men.
First and foremost, men are manipulative. Not all men. Not all men. But men with these negative impacts and negative responses to these laws and restrictions on things. It's like a man can go impregnate 10 women in one day. And it's only going to fall back on them 10 women. He can go ghost. He can go move to another island. If they don't have no way to serve him, or the women don't have enough money to go get him served, or to prove that he's the father,
okay,
they got to chase. And then you got to go on a manhunt to even get the man to go get the DNA test.
Now, see, the way that Anicia is saying in her facial expressions, listeners, it's comical. But what she's saying is right on point, right? You're talking about having access to be able to take advantage of the child support laws that are in place or whatever systems that are structured to hold fathers accountable. But you got to get to that point first, right? That's what you're saying, Anicia, right? You got to get to that point.
You got to hunt the father down if he gave you the right name.
Yeah.
Can I add on to what?
Yeah, please, DK.
Yeah, I just wanted to say also, like, it's more, I wouldn't say socially acceptable, but it's more common for a man to walk away, like, if it was a baby involved, than it is a woman. So, like, therefore, when it comes to things like this and, like, what a man should do, you know, to help out with the situation, like, a lot of people are not really focusing on that. It's only what the woman should do, you know? And I also don't think that's fair. And then, like, in relation to Roe v. Wade, like, I try to put myself in those shoes. Like, I play basketball at the school. And if I was ever in a situation, you know, to where, you know, I just so happened to get pregnant, like, my whole scholarship, my school, everything is at risk. So I feel like it's not really fair, one, you know, for someone to tell you what you should do with your body, but two, like, not only is having a child could be a problem for some people, but like I said, my schooling. So, therefore, I'm at risk in two different areas. So,
And listen, that's a part that oftentimes we miss, right? We're not even thinking about school athletes as much, student athletes, and how at risk they might be. We're talking, we can use, I mean, birth control methods are not 100 proof, right? Even if you utilize various methods. But
health risk,
exactly. Right. Which could be a detriment to whether or not you want to continue to pursue sports as a career. It could be a range. Right. But then also student athletes are also at risk for sexual assault, you know, often on school campuses, women, period. But definitely student athletes. Would you agree, DK?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. And so we're talking about all these different points when it comes to, you know, the implications of Roe v. Wade. Go ahead, Anicia.
And also dancers and stuff like that. A lot of dancers at the school, you know, because like we go to like almost a performing arts school, like dancing is top tier, like the band, everything. And I just know like stories where girls almost have to use their body, like men coerce them sexually to even get on like a dance team or a popular, you know what I'm saying? And they have to go through stuff like that. And just also being young, you know, things happen. You know, with being realistic, things happen. You know, have too much fun, stuff like that. And it's just like, it's so unfortunate that we're not thought of. And on top of the fact that we are the future.
Absolutely. Mia?
It could possibly be like a wrong place, wrong time type of thing as well. Like as far as like going out to parties and you're thinking you're out with your friends and you're getting a little bit too, you know, turned up. And you just happen to be in a place where there is someone there that's trying to, you know, do some things to you. So you have to be, it's like a female always has to be mindful of like constant defense mode all the time.
Yep.
And sometimes that could be very tiring for a woman. Like it could just be like, I don't want to go everywhere and be looking at a man sideways because I don't know what's on his mind or what he's thinking. Or even women as women on women, same thing with that. You don't know who's going to try you. Or just being on defense mode 24/7 is tiring for anybody.
Yep.
And just having to think about all that is kind of, it messes with your social life. You just don't want to be with nobody. You just don't want to be around anybody at all.
And that's sad.
I think about that. Yeah.
It's exhausting and it's sad. I'm sad just thinking about that, Mia.
Yes, because, okay, to piggyback off, like, you know, going to parties, because the first thing you know, like, you're told by any and everybody, especially, you know, close loved ones, friends, like, don't drink off nobody. Don't leave your drink around. You know, you already got to do that. And then the date rate pills, like, you'll be talking to somebody, they have split some of your drink, you're not even paying attention, you know, or you turn your head. It just takes the all of 2 seconds. It takes you to lean over, pick something up, reach in your pocket, look at your phone to answer it, look back at your drink. Fight, you know what I'm saying? It could have anything. And then being kidnapped, you know, like, it's just all types of stuff. And then every woman is not, you know, super strong-minded or super vocal. That's why a lot of rapes are not reported. You know, like, it's in a 90% that a rape, it's probably, we probably have like a 1% chance, and I should do my research so I could be more on point.
Yeah.
But it's very rare that a woman will go report a rape, because how likely is it for the man to actually get some justice? How likely is it for her to get some justice?
Yep. And there is some research that I see your hand, Mia. There is some research that really kind of talks about a range of reasons why folks don't, particularly Black women, don't report. And some of it has to do with fear. Obviously, some of it also has to do with just this burden that Black women, Black females carry and have carried around not adding to the incarceration rate of Black men. And sometimes women make the choice not to report because they don't want to add to that, you know, which also adds a whole nother burden around Black women and our own sexual health and well-being. Mia?
Oh, yes. I was just going to, going off of that fear part of not being reported, of rape not being reported, as far as fear and not being listened to.
That's really what
you're saying. It happened, but everyone or the people that you're trying to tell them that they just don't listen to you. They just don't believe you. So then you have to think, oh, okay, they're not going to believe me anyway. Yeah. So that's probably what most women are thinking. And that's probably like why they're not being reported.
Yep. Nope. That's
because
it.
Because they see the women that are being reported, they're not getting listened to or nothing's being done.
Yep. That's right. Yeah.
Or you're being judged off what you were wearing. Like, what were you wearing? What were you doing? You know, like, oh, something I had it on the crop top.
Yep.
The shorts. That meant I was ready to go.
Yep. Nope, that's right.
Get taken advantage of. Like, I just had a sign on my forehead, like, take advantage of me, please, I'm dying.
Because I have these jeans on.
I feel like a lot of women are also pressured into having sex. And I feel like that's something that needs to be talked about, too. I could sit up here and tell you, like, plenty of conversations of I've had with people. I was like, I said no so many times. You know, like, I felt like I just had to say yes so he could leave me alone, or, like, in fear of, like, you know, hurting me or something like that. Like, and I feel like that's still rape.
That's right. Yeah.
And I feel like that's not talked about enough. But, like, if I tell you I don't, no should be the number one flag.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be nothing else after no, but you'll be surprised. Even like for me, like I don't want to. Like I just don't want to. And that's like why Isabella, I don't want to. Like I'm not ready to do that, you know? But a lot of women are pressured into having sex. And I just think that needs to be talked about too, because people will be like, I mean, well, you ended up doing it. You know, as she said no 50 times. You know, he went out to leave, he locked her in the room, she didn't have a choice, you know. A lot of women have sex to protect themselves in that moment, just so they can go home. And I just don't think that's fair.
And that's right, Ashanti. That level of coercion and self-preservation is something that's rarely talked about. But it seems from what you're saying, and perhaps you all's experience with some of your peers, particularly Black females, that there is a greater prevalence of folks giving in for their own protection and their own safety.
Yeah, that's just, it's real. Like, it's real. What she just said, everything is so real about it. And being a young female, and like a lot of guys have a low self-esteem, you know, because I've been in the presence of both. And it's like, I know a guy, like, he asked, and it's like, no. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, okay, cool. We cool. Mm-hmm. But another guy, he is like, why? Or da, 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 you know, I'm not taking you home, or don't work. Or even if he let you go, and you know what I'm saying, y'all don't do it, now you a B word, and don't talk to me no more, and you cut off. And, now I'm being disrespected for my choice of me.
Yep. And see, this is the point, right? Being disrespected for your choices, which goes back to that whole point, right? Of women's choices being attacked.
In general.
Yep, Mia.
Or they'll lie on your body. They'll say that they had sex with you, or they did something with you just to embarrass you, just to put you down and have other people look at you like you were HOE, or, you know, doing just some nasty stuff. You just a nasty girl.
Yeah, what's up? Wait, what were you saying? What did you say, Anisia?
I said assaulting your character.
Assaulting your character, yeah. What's interesting is these are the same issues that my generation, we experienced back in the day. I mean, I really feel like nothing's changed, unfortunately. But the question now is, what do we do? What do we do? Where do we go from here?
I feel like that's a question that I would ask too, because if you see like a white woman say something like this happened to her, especially like with a Black man in particular, like, no doubt about it, like, it's, we're going to trial about it. Might not even go to trial, might just throw you in jail. But when a Black woman speaks out about something like this, it's like you have to go through so much just to get to that point. And I just don't think it's fair. It's kind of hard to say, like, what should we do? Because it's just like, who else could speak out about it that makes them like listen to us? Like what can we do? Like you said, like, this is going on in your generation, like, really not have much change with like Black women. And then even trying to ask women of other races to speak out about it, like, that's them. They'll never understand, you know, what it feels like to be like a Black woman in America. It's hard, you know. Yeah. Like, it's just like, what can we do? We have these protests. You know, like, we fight, we get angry, we try to have peaceful protests, but like, it's nothing works. Like, that would be my question too. Like, what can we do? Like, as Black women, like, what can we do? Because like, we done grouped together a couple of times, you know, nothing's happened.
Yeah.
You know, maybe one or two, they give us, okay, we'll give them justice this time. We clap about it, but like, it doesn't need to be like once every blue moon, once every 5 years. Every time that it's happened, and this is the problem, the issue needs to be fixed.
Yep.
That's just personally like how I feel about it.
Yep, that's right. That's right. Nope. I feel it. I feel the passion.
Well, in my opinion, like she said, we only got justice probably a couple of times. But I think what we really have to do is don't get no sleep about it. Like, we can't only advocate when it's happening, after it happened. You know what I'm saying? Like, just how we got integration to happen. You know, Martin Luther King, Rosa Parks, all of our people, like, they stayed up countless of nights, years. Like, they was years advocating. They didn't just advocate when it happened. They advocated to the day that they died. And that's what we do. We seem to get comfortable after we get justice, or after, you know, certain things happen, we just let it flow away until it happened again. No, we need to advocate weekly, monthly, like, with us being on campus at a Black school, and, you know, like, we need to have forums and workshops, like, monthly for stuff like that to make women feel comfortable. We need our nurses at the school, you know, outside advocating, letting women know that this is a safe space, you can come here and talk to me. You know, our counselors, we need to know our counselors, like, they need to be on Front Street. They need to be Welcome Week with cars and all that type of stuff, but they don't put forth that effort. And yes, it's up to us right now, because, like we've been saying, like, we are the future. But I think that's the way that we can start, by having sleepless nights and continuously, and even as an alumni, you know, after you graduate, still giving back to the school, going to speak, you know, not forgetting about the young Black woman, because
that's literally what we have to do, because that's the only method that genuinely works. You know, you have to feel comfortable, and you're not going to feel comfortable with just talking to somebody one time.
That's
you know, because even that one time you talked to them, it was uncomfortable. You know, so it's like, what can the people that's already higher up, or even us as peers, like, you know, just make it, just come up with a group or a town hall meeting, you know, to just let women know. Because once women feel like they have a voice, they won't be quiet. Once they know somebody listening, they're not going to stop.
They're
going to want, oh, this happened. This happened. Get this out there. You know, like, even having a group meet. This guy right here, he followed me to my dorm. Like, every woman should be like, this guy followed me to my dorm.
Yeah.
This, that,
with this picture. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's good. That's a, see, these are some tangible to-dos that we can all begin to think about how to actually execute, especially on campuses. Thank you for that. DK, and then Mia.
I just wanted to add, like, of course, Anisi, I agree with everything you said. We do need to get more when it comes to certain things like that. But I think it also starts in the household. Like, I feel like society does a great job of, like, turning us against each other. We can't even support each other as a race because they're turning the black men against the black women, the black women against other black women. Like, Mia was mentioning about colorism and stuff like that. Like, they're turning all against each other. So we don't even have that support from one another, you know? I just feel like I said, it should start in the household. Like, we should be training that child up. So why would you even want to approach a black woman, someone the same color as you, someone the same color as your mother, in that way?
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't want anybody to approach your sister like that, your mother, your cousins, your friends. Yeah. So why would you do that? So that's what I was saying.
Nice.
Like, it just, it starts, you know, with your upbringing, of course, and I just think as a whole we need to do better with, you know, being one, like being one together.
Let me go to Mia.
Oh yeah, I was just going back to what Anisi was saying about the schools and us being at a HBCU. Specifically in HBCU, is you have a lot of black people there. So my thing was, as far as the counseling thing, just being, having someone that you could talk to, that you could relate to, them being African-American would probably put a whole lot of comfort to a black female. Talking to another black female will probably like ease her mind or ease her nerves as far as talking about something like that, as far as talking about rape or assaults or anything like abuse at the home or abuse from their boyfriend or something like that. It's just a lot, just having someone of your same color or your same background where you could relate to probably would make it easier for females to open up and to release their feelings, their inner emotions.
No, that's right. And we can also start to, you know, touch on some of the mental health discussion that we wanted or plan to discuss. So Anisia,
I just have one more point.
Go ahead.
Okay, because I want to touch back on what DK said with the household, like how it should be taught. So I want to first start by saying, like, we are literally about four generations. I'm about the fifth generation from racism. I mean, from slavery. You know, so my great-grandma was born in 1934. Her mom was born in 1900. So they built like this family tree that we're in right now. It's just starting to be a difference and starting to be a difference as far as graduation rates and stuff with my peers and everybody who was born in my generation. And I would say it mostly, like, right now, when it comes to our kids, I feel like they will learn that. But with, when it comes to like current parents, a lot of them, like incest, you know, a lot of uncles have made little girls feel uncomfortable at a young age. A lot of husbands, you know, stuff that they've seen on TV, you know, and it stems because a lot of girls have experienced sexual assault in some way or being uncomfortable in some way in their family. And they don't even feel comfortable with their family. And I think that's why I steer back to the advocating and the peers. Like,
you literally have to find people who like-minded as you. Mm-hmm. Because it's a lot of stuff that I can't even talk to my family about. I can't even talk to them about how to save money, let alone something like that, you know? Or, you know, rational things that it gets you through every day-to-day life. It's stuff that I'm doing right now as a 22-year-old that people 2 times my age have never done. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, you really can't confide in them. And you really just have to find a way to surround yourself with like-minded people to really advocate.
And I think that's to one of, you know, one of the things that you all talked about earlier, which we'll get into the second round. One being networking, and two, just being able to identify healthy, supportive mentors, right? The ideas that you all have brought up, I think, are so, so, so important for folks to hear that you all are thinking about. Like, this is your life. This is where you are at your life. You are having to think about, one, us supporting one another, you being able to identify healthy, supportive mentors, being threatened by sexual assault, being afraid of what type of access you're going to have for your sexual health resources. Like, these are the things that you all are having to really process and think about during this time in your life. And so let's pick up on a couple of these pieces, particularly the mental health. And we talked earlier about colorism, and also just thinking about some of what DK said, which is really, it starts in the household, and really, how can we support each other? Wow! Was that not dynamic? Was that not 10 earfuls? Listen, these voices are critical for the change that we need in our world today, particularly as it relates to the lived experiences of young Black females. These are young adult women. These are our change agents in the making. Are we not excited? I know I am. I mean, listen, we talked about marijuana legalization and the disproportionate impact it's had on Black communities, particularly those that have spent a significant amount of their life in prison for something that is now legal. We talked about regulating women's sexual organs and sexual health, and how that is disproportionate to how men's sexual organs are not regulated, abortion rights, child support, rape. We went all over in a good way. I encourage you to listen in to part two, because we continue these discussions as well as many others, as mentioned. I hope that you are finding this valuable. This again, which one point was mentioned around hearing and listening to Black female voices, is so important. And you being here and listening to this is greatly appreciated. This is only a small segment of our general society. This is not to suggest that all young Black women think this way, but it gives you an ear in on an authentic conversation that is about, for, and from these young Black females. Thank you again so much for listening. I hope that you join us for our next episode, part two of these voices from these young Black educated women. I am your host, Dr. Marquita Cherie Dorsey, and you have been listening to the From Girls to Women podcast.